to see a big, big crowd. Are you enjoying the cool fall-like weather we're having? I guess it's probably the last bit of cool weather before the hot sets in. You know how it feels in the fall, kind of the way it's been feeling lately in the fall before the feast time. It's just something about, I don't know, something about the weather that just feels like feast time. You know, it's air starting to cool off, and it's just, you're anxious for the feast, and it feels like feast time. Well, Thursday, I happened to be in Rome Thursday morning, and I came out of the store, and the air was a little cool and crisp, and sky was all clear. Felt just exactly like feast time. Made me want to start getting ready for the feast. Those of you, I guess most of us here have been around a long time. You probably remember the old days when Mr. Armstrong used to make every feast site for one sermon during the feast. And very frequently, I don't know if every time, but very frequently, he would start out with a question. You know what the question was? Why are we here? Well, I'm guessing everybody knows why we're here today. It's the day of Pentecost. It's a commanded assembly, or as it says in the Old Testament, holy convocation. So I would ask it a little differently. What is Pentecost? Well, the word Pentecost actually only appears in the King James Bible three times. All three of those in the New Testament, two in Acts and one in 1 Corinthians. According to Strong's, the Greek word for Pentecost is something like Pentecoste. Kind of sounded like Pig Latin. But it means 50th, or 50th day in this case. Of course, that's because Pentecost is the 50th day from the Sabbath within the days of unleavened bread. It's also called the Feast of First Fruits and the Feast of Weeks, both of which, of course, describe part of the meaning of Pentecost. But Pentecost is different from the rest of the holy days. Well, in several ways, but one of the ways is because it's not given as a date on the calendar. It says you should count the days to Pentecost. So therefore, the calendar day of Pentecost varies. Why does God have us counting the days to Pentecost instead of just giving a date for it? Well, the counting is actually part of the meaning and symbolism of Pentecost. We think of Pentecost, we think of how it pictures first fruits and the receiving of God's Spirit the day the New Testament church began. But it also pictures freedom. And that's what I would like to talk about today. Now, I haven't normally thought of Pentecost as picturing freedom until I heard a sermon on that subject by Martin Mickelson a few years ago. He gave it a few years ago. I just recently heard it. And I thought it was very interesting, the points he made about why we count and the significance of it and how it pictures freedom. So I thought you may be interested too. So consequently, a lot of what I have today did come from that sermon. So let's begin in Leviticus 23, the holy day chapter. It's sort of a Reader's Digest version, if you will, of the Holy Days. Leviticus 23 and verses 9 through 21. I'll talk about Pentecost. So let's excuse me. So let's begin in verse 9. And the Lord spake to Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, When you come into the land which I give you, and reap its harvest, then you shall bring the sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. He shall weigh the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted on your behalf. On the day after the Sabbath, the priest shall weigh it. That's the day you begin counting for Pentecost. And the next few verses go on to describe the offerings that would be made on that day. But let's drop on down to verse 15. Leviticus 23 and verse 15. And you shall count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, 7 Sabbaths shall be complete. It says 7 Sabbaths completed, so you're counting by weeks. It would be 7 weeks. Then in verse 16, count 50 days to the day after the 7th Sabbath. Then you shall offer a new grain offering to the Lord. Verse 17, you shall bring from your dwellings two wave loaves of 2/10 of an ephah. They shall be of fine flour, and they shall be baked with leaven. They are the first fruits of the Lord. So these offerings, they are the first fruits. Then in verse 18, and you shall offer with the bread 7 lambs of the first year, without blemish, 1 young bull, 2 rams. They shall be as a burnt offering before the Lord, with their grain offering and their drink offerings, an offering made by fire for a sweet aroma to the Lord. Then you shall sacrifice 1 kid of the goats as a sin offering, and 2 male lambs of the first year as a sacrifice, of a peace offering. Then the priest shall wave them with the bread of the first fruits as a wave offering before the Lord, and with the 2 lambs, they shall be holy to the Lord for the priest. Then verse 21, and you shall proclaim on the same day that it is a holy convocation to you. You shall do no customary work on it. It shall be a statute forever in all your dwellings throughout all your generations. We usually just look on the calendar to see when the day of Pentecost is, like we do for the other holy days. But the emphasis here is on the counting. It says 7 Sabbaths shall be complete. And then you add that extra 1 day to make it 50 days. In the Old Testament, it's referred to as the Feast of Weeks, not the Feast of Days, or not the Feast of 50th. The counting is part of the symbolism. The Hebrew word for count there implies more than just counting days. Normally, if you think you're counting the days, you would just start counting, 1, 2, 3, and all the way up to 50. But counting implies a little bit more than that. In fact, Strong says it means to score with a mark as a tally or a record. That is, by implication, to inscribe. The focus is on the event, But you count off the days in anticipation of the event. Kind of like when our kids were little and we were looking forward to the feast. We would cut these strips of colored paper and make them into a chain. I guess some of you may have done that too. Each link on the chain would represent a day. Every day, take a link off and you're that much closer to the feast. And once you get to the end of the chain, it's feast time. Or maybe like a prisoner, a person in prison, and he's almost has his time served, and the end is coming up. He may have a calendar with a date marked on the calendar, and every day go in there with a pencil or whatever, mark off a day, one day closer to freedom. That's the kind of counting that leads up to Pentecost. Let's notice some other counting that is talked about in Leviticus chapter 25. Leviticus 25, and starting with verse 1. Verse 1, "And the Lord spoke to Moses on Mount Sinai, saying, Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, When you come into the land which I give you, then the land shall keep a Sabbath to the Lord. 6 years you shall sow your field, and 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather its fruit. But the seventh year there shall be a Sabbath of solemn rest for the land, the Sabbath of the Lord. You shall neither sow your field nor prune your vineyard." So here it's talking about the land Sabbath, where the land has a rest period every seventh year. We'll be coming back to Leviticus 25 if you want to hold your place there, but I would like to notice a couple of verses in Deuteronomy 15 along the same lines. Deuteronomy 15, and beginning in verse 1 there also. Verse 1, "At the end of 7 years you shall grant a release of debts. And this is the form of release. Every creditor who has lent anything to his neighbor shall release it. He shall not require it of his neighbor or his brother, because it is called the Lord's release." So on that seventh land rest, the Sabbath for the land, not only did the land rest, but it was also a year of release of debts. The land rested, the people rested, because they didn't do any planting or harvesting, and the debts were released. More time could be spent with their family and with God. God planned that as a blessing for his people. So now let's go back to Leviticus 25. And we'll start back with verse 8. Leviticus 25 and verse 8. We're still counting. "And you shall count 7 Sabbaths of years for yourself." 7 times 7 years. "And the time of the 7 Sabbaths," say that 3 times fast. "The time of 7 Sabbaths of years shall be to you 49 years. So here you're counting all these years, and you're counting up to 49 years. "Then you shall cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month, on the Day of Atonement. You shall make the trumpet to sound throughout your land." And verse 10, "And you shall consecrate the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout all the land to all its inhabitants. it shall be a jubilee for you. Each of you shall return to his possession. Each of you shall return to his family. That's the same count as Pentecost. Except, of course, there it's counting by years instead of by weeks. Let's continue reading in verse 11. That 50th year shall be a jubilee to you, and in it you shall neither sow nor reap what grows on its own accord, nor gather the grapes of your untended vine. So they were to not only do any planting, but they were not to harvest what grows on its own. Verse 12. For it is a jubilee, it shall be holy to you. You shall eat its produce from the field. They couldn't do any harvesting, but they were allowed to eat. They could go out and eat what grew on its own, but they were not to harvest it and store it up. In this year of jubilee, each of you shall return to his possession. In the jubilee year, all the land was returned to its original owner. There was liberty throughout the land. Everybody got a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to start over, debt-free. If they'd fallen on hard times and had to sell their land, it would be returned to them so they could have their land back. When the jubilee year was approaching, can you just imagine people looking forward to that year and counting down the time, counting down the days, the weeks, the days to that 50th year? Only two more years and then we're free. Or only one more year and we're going to be free. We get our land back. That's the symbolism of Pentecost. We count the Pentecost in groups of seven. After seven of them, then we add the 50th, which is symbolically the jubilee year. Then we're free. Let's notice what it says in Leviticus 25. Let's look at verses 39 through 42. Leviticus 25, beginning in verse 39. And if one of your brethren who dwells with you becomes poor and sells himself to you, you shall not compel him to serve as a slave. In verse 40, as a hired servant and a sojourner, he shall be with you and shall serve you until the year of Jubilee. Then he shall depart from you, he and his children with him, and shall return to his own family. He shall return to the possession of his fathers. So if a person had been served, had to sell himself into servitude, then on that jubilee year, he would be free. And then in verse 42, for they are my servants whom I brought out of the land of Egypt. They shall not be sold as slaves. God didn't want his people to be sold as slaves, but they could work as a hired servant until the year of Jubilee. Then they would have to be freed. So at that 50th year, when you release that servant, you're in a sense releasing him back to God, because he is ultimately God's servant. A man that had been sold into servitude, I imagine he would be looking forward and counting down to that time also when he would be free. That's why we count down to Pentecost. That's the symbolism of the day. The symbolism of the day is the symbolism of counting to freedom. Counting by Sabbath or sabbatical years to the time when we can ultimately be restored to God. Today, We don't live in a system where these rules apply, but the spiritual principles do. Let's go back to Leviticus 25 and start back reading in verse 44. Leviticus 25 and verse 44. As for your male and female slaves whom you may have from the nations that are around you, from them you may buy male and female slaves. Moreover, you may buy the children of the strangers who dwell among you, and their families who are with you, which they beget in your land, and they shall become your property. You may take them as an inheritance for your children after you, to inherit them as a possession. They shall be your permanent slaves. But regarding your brethren, the children of Israel, you shall not rule over one another with rigor. So these rules of release only apply to the Israelites, not to the people of the nations around them. They could be kept as permanent slaves. Again, when we count on to 50 on Pentecost, we're counting to freedom. With the Holy Spirit, we can be free from spiritual ignorance and hopelessness. More importantly, we can be free from sin. Turn with me to Matthew 11, verse 28. Matthew 11 and verse 28. Come. Of course, this is, if you have a red letter Bible, you'll see these are in red. This would be the words of Christ. Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. My yoke is easy, and my burden is light. Pentecost should portray to us this true rest and this true freedom. The barley harvest started with the wave sheaf offering during the days of unleavened bread and ended around Pentecost. The whole spring harvest pictures those first called to salvation. The first of the first fruits, which is the wave sheaf that represents Christ. But all the rest of the spring harvest is the first fruits, those who are called first in the plan of God. So counting down to 50 is counting to the completion of the harvest. Let's go back to Leviticus 23, verse 22 this time. There's one other verse that we didn't read earlier pertaining to the day of Pentecost. Leviticus 23 and verse 22. When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field when you reap, nor shall you gather any gleaning from your harvest. You shall leave it for the poor and for the stranger. I am the Lord, your God. What does that have to do with Pentecost? The spring harvest is part of the symbolism of Pentecost. And this cleaning was a provision made for the poor so they could eat and be released from bondage. We can read some more about this cleaning in Deuteronomy 24. Deuteronomy chapter 24 and verse 19. Verse 19. When you reap your harvest in the field and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. when you beat your olive trees. You shall not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. When you gather, verse 21, when you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not glean it afterward. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. And then notice in verse 22, the reason for this. Verse 22, and you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Therefore, I command you to do this thing. Remember, you were in bondage in Egypt. There are people around you who are in bondage now. So you should make a provision for them as well. It didn't say go out and harvest it and hand it to them, but just to give them an opportunity to provide for themselves, to make their own way. That's part of the symbolism of Pentecost. I'd like to read part of what it says in the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia about an article on Pentecost. It says, Pentecost signifies the completing of the barley harvest which had begun at the time of the waving of the first sheaf of the first fruits. Pentecost, or the Feast of Weeks, therefore fell on the 50th day after this occurrence. The wheat was then also nearly everywhere harvested, and the general character of the festival was that of a harvest home celebration. So it was a harvest festival. And going on, it says, the day was observed as a Sabbath day. All work was suspended, and the people appeared before God to express their gratitude. It was a festival of good cheer. It was a festival of good cheer, a day of joy. Free will offerings were made to the Lord, and it was to be marked by a liberal spirit toward the Levite, the stranger, the orphan, and the widow, because the day symbolizes freedom, release from bondage. The Israelites were admonished to remember their bondage on that day and to reconsecrate themselves to the Lord. You know, the crop is not guaranteed until the harvest is in. Don't you know the farmer would be anticipating the harvest, looking forward to it? There's a lot of different things that could happen before the harvest was ready. You could have bad weather, you could have a storm, you could have a hailstorm that would destroy the crop. But can you imagine the farmer would be looking forward and anticipating harvesting the crop and getting it in so it would be secure? Counting down the days till he could do that harvest and get it stored. That's the symbolism of counting down to Pentecost, when the spiritual harvest is complete. This country is called the land of the free. But what we call freedom, it's not really freedom. Actually, it's bondage in God's eyes. True freedom is freedom from sin. Freedom from sin, not freedom to sin. By counting to Pentecost, we anticipate true freedom and true rest. First for the first fruits, and then for all of mankind. When Pentecost finally arrives, it's like having the harvest safely in the barn. A harvest that was made possible by God's Holy Spirit. Pentecost pictures freedom in its fullest sense, because it's freedom from sin. through Jesus Christ, we have access to that Spirit by which the power of God restores us to freedom and restores us to Himself. We can stop counting now. Pentecost is here, and our freedom has arrived.